dive into an ocean of possibilities with the DKM program of the American Council of the Blind. Get connected and build a strong leadership foundation. Apply to become a 2024 recipient of the Durward K. McDaniel First Timers Award. Get curious, explore, become engaged, and focus on making impactful contributions. Apply to become a 2024 ACB JP Morgan Chase Leadership Fellow. If selected, you'll be sponsored to attend the ACB Conference and Convention and learn how to navigate the waves of leadership from mentors and leaders of ACB. Don't delay. Apply today. For more information and to complete the application, visit www.acb.org/DKM.
Opinions expressed on ACB Media are those of the content creators and should not be assumed to reflect product endorsements or the views of the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff. Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind. I'm Brian McCallan. MyChampagneValley.com reports that over 50 million people will be seeing this April's solar eclipse. That includes the blind and visually impaired community. Harvard Center for Astrophysics astronomer Allison Bierila has figured out one way to help the blind see and experience the wonder of the solar eclipse. That's by turning light into sound. Allison's here to talk about how the innovative method has been realized. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Brian.
Glad you're here. Tell us about yourself and Harvard Center for Astrophysics.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm an astronomer at the Center for Astrophysics. I have a couple of different roles. One of my main roles here is on managing the labs and telescopes that we use for undergraduate teaching on campus. And I also study exoplanets, so planets that orbit other stars on the side. And of course, I run this project called LightSound, which is a solar eclipse device, which we'll talk about today.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that now. How did you make this discovery of turning light into sound that the visually impaired that can just help them see the solar eclipse?
Yeah, so in my role as the lab and telescope manager, I think about all the lab components that we have for courses. And so back in 2017, I was thinking about accessibility of our space and can all the students take the labs and participate in an equal kind of fashion. And it was around the time when the Great American Solar Eclipse was happening. And so there's a colleague that was here at the Center for Astrophysics at the time. Her name is Wanda Diaz-Merced. She's a blind astronomer, and she uses sonification. She uses sound to do her research. And so I started talking to her about the accessibility of our labs and things like that. And she brought up this idea of trying to see if we can make a device that would be accessible to the blind and low vision community. And that's kind of how this project got started. And so it kind of grew from there.
All right. Tell us more about the device. How does it work for the blind and visually impaired to see the solar eclipse?
Yeah. So it started with this idea. We knew we wanted to take light and convert it to sound. We also knew that we wanted to build something that was simple and inexpensive so we can get it to as many people as possible. So luckily, there's these little components that we get online, a little like a light sensor and a MIDI board and a microcontroller board, from Adafruit. And you can buy them pretty inexpensively. And we solder them together and we build these devices. So essentially, we have this light sensor that detects the brightness of light. So as it changes when the moon eclipses the sun, the brightness goes down and it gets mapped through the microcontroller board, which is essentially like a little mini computer in there that maps the brightness of the light to a sound output. And so the MIDI component allows us to map it to different instruments to make it pleasant to our ear. So that's the gist of kind of how it works.
So how could our listeners and I use this device?
Yeah, so it's a pretty simple device to use. So it's just got an on-off switch and a audio jack and a micro USB port that can connect to a computer. So the idea is the devices are powered by a battery, but you can also power them with computer power. And you just turn them on. When we ship them out to people, the code is on there. And so you would either connect the audio jack to headphones and listen kind of as an individual experience, or you can connect them to a speaker and project it to a group, for instance.
Oh my goodness, we're all going to have to try this. So the light sound idea came from the 2017 eclipse. Where were the prototypes deployed?
Yeah, so for 2017, we only had three devices that we had built. It was kind of like a, like you said, a prototype and a proof of concept. We wanted to make sure it worked. And so we had, I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So I had one with me, and I was mostly trying to make sure that we had good sound quality and get it out. I actually streamed it on the internet at the time because my colleague Wanda that I spoke about was going to be in South Africa. So we were trying to get her students to listen in from South Africa. So that was what I was doing. And then we had two that went to Kentucky. So we had one at Morehead State University and one at the Kentucky School for the Blind. And they were, you know, projecting the sound as well to their groups, but they also wanted to test the capability of connecting it to a computer and collecting the data. I didn't mention that yet, but you can also connect these devices to the computer, like I said, to power them. But there's also a capability now that that you can collect data and you can save that data or plot the data, and you know, come back later and either sonify it or do some analysis on it, essentially.
Where in Jackson Hole, Wyoming was the device deployed?
I was on top of Jackson Hole Ski Resort, essentially, for an event up there. And we had fantastic weather. It was my first solar eclipse. It was incredible.
Wow. So the light sound device uses sonification. What's sonification?
Yeah, simply put, it just takes data and converts it to sound. So in our case, we're taking the data is the light brightness. So it's just measuring ambient light or, you know, the sunlight. And as the moon eclipses the sun, the light will dim. And so the light sensor will just measure less light, and that changes the sound, essentially.
So the sonification takes data from the sun's rays. In this case, it's going to be also the eclipse rays, and convert that into sound. What happens when the sunlight starts to dim?
Yeah, so our kind of the way we've mapped the sound, and this is kind of a choice. Like everyone, when we're designing this, you can kind of choose what you want. But this is what we did, so I'll explain it. And I'll also mention that all of this is open source online, so people can go online and download the instructions to build it, and they can, you know, download all the schematics of how you'd build it. You can also download all the code and make changes if you, for instance, don't like the choices that we made. You can make your own choices. But what we decided was that the brightest sunlight, like a bright sunny day, or you know, just a bright room or something, would be like a flute sound. So the brightest light is flute, and then it starts to dim. And so, you know, maybe if you're indoors and just like a normal, you know, brightness of a room, or as the sun starts to eclipse, you go into this clarinet range, is kind of the mid range. And then, you know, in the darkest part of totality, you would hear like a clicking sound. So it goes from flute to clarinet to then this like low kind of clicking sound that gets slower and slower. And we did that because it was kind of like we wanted, you know, the bright to be like a higher pitch. And then, you know, when you're in totality, a lot kind of happens, right? So it gets darker, the temperature changes, you know, sometimes animals react differently and people are, you know, clapping, cheering, crying. And so we didn't want the sound to take away from that. We wanted it to be like, you know, a low kind of clicking that, you know, made people feel and know that it's dark out, essentially.
So I've got the device, and I would plug it into my computer. And when the solar eclipse happens, does the device have to point at the sun for it to work?
No. So it Oftentimes people just lay it on a table. You can also put it on like a tripod or even on a telescope that tracks, but essentially it's just going to measure the ambient light, so all the light surrounding you. So if it's the only recommendation we give is that you don't move the device if you're trying to get a good sense of how it's changing. So once you set it up, you know, you want to make sure the light sensor is facing up, but it doesn't have to be directly pointed at the sun. If you just lay it on a table facing with the sensor up, it'll measure the changing brightness over the course of the event.
Who's excited about the device?
I think we're all excited about. We're building 750 of these to or more. We're trying to build more, and we've already got close to 1,500 requests. So it's a bit overwhelming, but we are very excited, and we are trying to get as many out to people as possible, making sure as many events that are hosting these solar eclipse events get devices. We're sending them to schools for the blind. We're sending them to universities, museums, libraries. You know, some people are just saying, you know, my daughter's blind or my mother's blind and they want a device. So we're trying to get these to just as many people as we can help out and that are excited about it. And we're just thrilled to see how much interest and excitement there is around it.
Can you give us some testimonials of people who've used the device, what they think?
Yeah, I mean, we had three during the three devices during the 2017 eclipse, but then in 2019 and 2020, we built around 100 or a little bit over 100 devices, and that was during the South American eclipses, so they went through Chile and Argentina, and so we got a lot of feedback there. Just I think that the biggest one was just, you know, if a lot of the people stated they felt really excited to be able to experience this eclipse that they previously hadn't been able to in a way that they, you know, felt like they were interacting with it, I guess, in some ways, because you're able to collect your own data. And just the thought of it not being an afterthought, that some of these devices were able to provide a way to interact and include a community that sometimes isn't always included. So it really inspired us to keep going and keep building these devices, and we're just so excited that this project has grown so much.
Could you tell us about some of the other individuals who worked on the project and their contributions?
Definitely. So I mentioned Wanda, and so Wanda and I, it started with our conversation, and then Daniel Davis is the director of science demos here at Harvard. And so he kind of builds demonstrations for classes. And so he's the idea guy. So you kind of go to, well, he's the guy that makes ideas happen. So we took this idea to him and we're like, we're thinking of this. Can you help us kind of come up with the prototype? So he really helped us build that first prototype. And then someone that I can't emphasize enough has been huge on this project is Soleil Hyman. She started in 2018 on this project when she was an undergrad at Harvard. And now she's a graduate student at the University of Arizona. And she's been working on this project ever since. So she really helped us redesign the device. So the prototype was the one that we deployed in Kentucky and Jackson Hole in 2017. But we knew we wanted to improve the light sensor capabilities and also improve the sound. And Soleil is studying astrophysics as her degree, but she's also a musician, so she has a really good ear for it. So she helped us make some of those choices about the flute and the clarinet and things like that, and just getting the pitch right and making sure we can get the full dynamic range of change that we would hear from the dimming of the light. And so she worked on that, and she also helped us redesign some of those hardware issues as well. And she's just done a ton on this project. So she's a super close collaborator. Even today, we work together on this. And then finally, Elliot Richards is an engineer here at the Center for Astrophysics, and he's helped out with this latest eclipse, because we have kind of two versions that exist. One is what we call the wired version, simply because it literally has all these wires that you connect to solder it together. But we wanted to improve that design by creating a printed circuit board or a PCB board. And so Elliot took our wired design and made it into a PCB version. So to build a wired device, it takes probably 4 hours if you've never soldered before. And now the printed circuit board version can be built in 30 minutes or an hour if you've never soldered. And in our last workshop, we had someone build it in 7 minutes. So it really was key to making sure we can build all these devices that we're hoping to get out.
We like to learn more about how the device looks. Does it fit into the palm of your hand? Is it very small? Is it big?
Yep, it's about the size of a smartphone. It definitely fits in the palm of your hand. All the devices that we're working with now, we 3D print, so they all have Braille on them. The cover has our Light Sound logo, which is kind of like a circle with a musical note in the middle, and it says Light Sound in words on the bottom, and then Light Sound in Braille on top. And then, you know, there's just a couple labels for the on-off switch and the USB with Braille on the sides.
And the nice thing is you don't have to, you could charge the thing, I understand, but the nice thing is you don't have to update any software. You don't have to have a computer program to update the device, right?
Yeah, no computer at all is required. Everything's on it when you receive it. And the wired version runs off a 9-volt battery. So if you had that version, you'd have to, you know, replace that battery from time to time. But the PCB version, which is the main one that we're shipping out now, has a rechargeable lithium ion battery. So you just plug that into the micro USB port to charge. You need to charge that on a computer or in an outlet.
Are you going to come out with newer versions of the device?
Yeah, so I think with this version, the Light Sound, we're very happy with what exists right now in terms of, you know, it's been out for a couple of eclipses now and it works really well. We do want to add on to it though. So like one thing that that Wanda's actually really focused on now is adding a haptic component. So if there's a blind and deaf person, you'd get some vibrational feedback. So we want to try to include that and build on that. And we actually have like Wanda and a student have worked on a prototype of that already. And so we just need to do much more testing. And what we're really, really excited about is this other version of the device, which we're calling OrcaStar right now, but it's still, we have a working version, but again, we want to test it and build on it more. But the main difference is that it has a color sensor instead of just white light. So it measures it converts light to sound based on color or wavelength of light. So red light in that case would have a lower tone and blue light would have a higher tone. And it's really neat because it not only measures the ambient light, but it also has an LED that you can reflect off of things. So you can reflect it off your shirt and know that you have a blue shirt on or something like that. So we're super excited about that. And if you ever get a chance to talk to Wanda, she's always going to talk about the OrcaStar because that's the future of where we're going, but we're just not there yet. We're so focused on this eclipse right now, but after the eclipse, that's our plan.
This is really good. I'm sure you're hoping to build and sell more Light Sound units before the eclipse comes in less than a couple of months.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize that we're not selling anything. Everything is, like I said, open source, so people can go online and do whatever they want. They can take everything and build their own and edit their own. But we are building. We've been funded by the Simons Foundation, the National Science Foundation, the International Astronomical Union, and the American Astronomical Union. American Astronomical Society to build these devices for the upcoming eclipse. So we're building, like I said, 750 or so. And so those are just getting built and donated for free. So people are requesting devices and we're trying to get them out to them. And that's how we're building them is through running workshops. And I haven't really mentioned the workshops, but I'll just say quickly that these workshops are key because I mentioned our team and it's very small. And so for us to build this many devices, we really need the community to help us out. So what we do is we run these workshops and essentially the participants come and you don't even have to have soldering experience, but you come and we teach you how to solder and you help us build these devices and then they're donated back to the community. So it's like a win-win. The participants learn a new skill and they're giving back to the community. And then we're getting these devices built and can get them out to people that need and want them.
So these devices are free to get?
Yes. Yes. Completely free.
How might our listeners get them for free?
Yeah, so we have a website. It's astrolab.fas.harvard.edu/lightsound.html, or people could probably Google Light Sound in Harvard and they'd get to the website. And on there, we have all the information about the device, about the project, what we're doing, all the documentation. I should also say the documentation is in Spanish, English, and French. So those are the main places that the eclipses have gone through so far. We'll continue to update the documentation to other locations as well and languages. And on that, on the website, you can also, there's buttons to click and request a device. So if you're interested, we welcome all the requests. We're actively trying to fulfill them.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think we covered it. Thank you. I really appreciate this chance to get to talk to you about the project.
Well, Allison, it was great you came on today, and thanks for joining us. We just can't wait to give the device a try.
Great. I'd love to hear your feedback when you do.
Okay, before we go, listeners, I welcome your comments on this program. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at Speak Out Blind or Speak Out for the Blind. You can also check out my website at speakingoutfortheblind.weebly.com. More information on today's show is posted there. Just look under List of Episodes and Show News tab. And my show archive is at speaking-out-for-blind.pinecast.co. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
As older adults with vision loss, we understand your fears, your frustrations, and feelings of isolation. The Alliance on Aging and Vision Loss is here to help you as you pursue the independent lifestyle you deserve. For more information, visit www.aavl-blind-seniors.org or call 916-995-3967 for more information. AAVL, a supporter of the ACB Media Network.
Join me, Brian McCallan, on Speaking Out for the Blind. I interview blind newsmakers to inspire the population to go for their dreams. Speaking Out for the Blind airs Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern on ACB Media One.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
You are listening to ACB Media One, also known as Mainstream, the flagship of the ACB Media Network. The ACB Media Network is a service of the American Council of the Blind. Please visit us at acbradio.org.